Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I get to welcome motivational speaker and business coach Kim Fulcher to the show. Now, she is a Silicon Valley veteran and has founded three companies and acts as a board member and angel investor. She is the author of Remodel Your Reality, 7 Steps to Rebalance Your Life and Reclaim Your Passion, and the producer of Get Your Groove Back, which is an on-demand coaching program for women. Now, Kim delivers inspiring keynotes on the scientific, listen to that carefully, scientific fundamentals of performance, empowerment, and focus, and she coaches female executives and entrepreneurs. Kim is a frequent media contributor on wellness and women's issues, and her expert advice has been featured in magazines such as Time and 17. She's also a contributor and facilitator for Arietta Huffington's Thrive Global. I'm always in there reading stuff. It's great. And her advice videos have been viewed by millions. I can do this. I can talk. She's a passionate advocate for advancing women in leadership and funding female-led companies. Kim, welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. It's so good to have you here.
Oh, hello, Denise. It's so good to be with you today.
Oh, thank you. Listen, I've been following you around. I'm lurking, just so you know.
I love it.
We met some time ago. You know, my podcast gets scheduled out months in advance, and often that gives me time to really kind of follow my guests and, you know, find out what they're up to and you know, what they're doing that is, you know, wonderful. You do some pretty terrific things, I have to say. I'm impressed.
Oh, thank you so much, and I am a fan of your show as well, so we've mutual admiration society today.
There you go. That's a great way to start a Friday. Well, listen, before, and I'm losing my voice, we've had all kinds of weather changes here. It'll be gorgeous and cool and crisp one morning, and the next day I wake up, and it's like I walked into a steam bath, and my body is just going, oh, heck. So if I sound bad, that's why. So before we get started, tell people a bit about yourself that I missed, you know, something that you think is important for our audience to know about you.
Sure. You know, I have been an entrepreneur for about 25 years now, and I've been a coach for 20. So I have more than 12,000 hours of experience working with primarily professional women and, you know, female founders, executives, as they move through not only the, you know, the requirements of running, managing, founding, launching, growing a business, but also of taking care of themselves and taking care of their family. And so I think that what I really bring to the table when I'm working with either a group or an individual is a perspective that's colored over certainly decades, and yet a perspective that even with the different walks of people from socioeconomic status, you know, I've worked with stay-at-home moms and CEOs. So in terms of the work they're doing, what I do find and what I look for are the patterns that really humanize us and that link us. And I find that even the most successful among us share many things that hold us back. So my work is really around finding that human element that unites us and helping us overcome the barriers that we all face, regardless of what our status might be in life. And then the final thing that I think is really important, and I certainly didn't start this way, but, you know, about 10 years into my coaching, I really started to follow and fall in love with brain science. So everything that I do is based not just on my experience, but is based on what is happening in your brain when you do X. So all of the tools and tips and techniques that I teach are based on brain science, and that makes them incredibly powerful, because not only do we all have commonalities in terms of how our brains work, But there's also, you know, there's an irrefutable science when you're looking at the machinations of the brain. And so everything that I teach is based on making sure that we're harnessing the natural aptitude in your brain.
And see, I find that fascinating, but I have an oddball question. At least I think it's an oddball question. What is the difference between brain science and, listen, I'm a great believer in, you know, what you think is what you are, what you eat is what you are, what you drink is what you are. How does what you think, how is that different from the brain? Because the brain is an organ, right? It's part of our body.
Yes.
But we're thinking, isn't that a little bit, I can't even try, I know what I want to say, but I'm not saying it well. So can you extrapolate anything out of that?
Sure. And, you know,
I think you're
right on, actually, because, you know, today we're going to be talking about six of the scientific, quote, secrets of performance that I really work with all of my clients to navigate. And one of them has specifically to do with that is that, you know, your talk track, the things you say to yourself inside your own head, it can push you forward or it can hold you back. And you're exactly right that thoughts become things. So specifically, everything you think creates a biochemical response in your body. If you're thinking good thoughts, you're creating happy chemistry in your body. And when you're thinking negative thoughts or stressful thoughts or fearful thoughts, which, let's just be honest, so many of us are in this moment in time, right? You're actually creating a chemical response in your body that is similar to fight or flight, where you're releasing cortisol and really harmful, you're creating a really harmful chemical bath in your body, just even if what you're thinking isn't real. And I'll give you and your listeners just a little experiment so that you know this is true. So I want everyone to think about a big, bright, juicy lemon. And imagine you've got this lemon in your hand and you're squeezing it ever so slightly and you bring it up to your nose and you smell it. And I want you to imagine you've got a little knife there and you put it down on a cutting board and you're cutting that lemon and you've got a little glass next to you and you're getting ready to squeeze that lemon into that glass. You have a little hot lemon water to kick your day off, as I always do. And as you're imagining this, I want you to notice that your mouth is probably watering. And that is because your brain does not need an actual lemon to cue a physical response. Your thoughts do that all by themselves. So one, and we'll kick it off with our first point of scientific performance, is that you must manage what goes on in your head because your talk track creates your reality.
And that's exactly what I was trying to articulate and failed miserably. So thank you for
You did great.
It's like, I can just chat. Today's not one of those mornings, just so you know. I'm like,
We'll muddle through.
Yeah. But you know, when you started describing that lemon, I am a passionate advocate of, and it's really called a lemon cleanse, but it's lemon juice, organic lemon juice. It's a really good syrup, you know, not the kind that you put on your waffles. This is the kind that's, you know, I think it's A or B grade. It's lovely stuff. And cayenne pepper. And when you started talking about that, I was grabbing for the cayenne in my head.
Okay,
so go figure.
Interesting, which, you know, in your brain.
I don't like sweet foods or drinks, so, but add a little cayenne, I'm all happy.
There you go. Well, and cayenne actually increases your metabolism, so you're onto something there, right?
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Okay, so what is the, and I agree with you, listen, I have often, and I don't do this anymore because I caught myself doing it, but I've had headaches all my life. It's just part of how my body functions, so. But I determined that I was also giving my headaches permission to just take over because I would say to myself, I've got a headache. Well, duh, now you do. If you didn't before, you do now because now you're giving it, you know, a lot of, you know, attention in your mind. So now when I catch myself with that old, worn out, I've got a headache. Oh, no, I don't. I go get water. I stand up. I breathe. I do the Wonder Woman pose. I take a deep breath. I do everything I can to not have a headache get worse or just kind of kick it back to the back of my head, and eventually I don't even notice that it's there. So that's where I was trying to go. We do, you know, if we're thinking something, we can manifest it almost instantly, like, oh, I have a headache. No, Denise, you don't. Let's go do something about this. So, and yes, it's not that easy, but it's an awareness, I think.
Well, the trick that I use with clients, and I'm a big fan of games, especially funny, silly little games, because our brains hold on to those. But when we're talking about thoughts specifically, you know, I talk about two voices that we have. We all have a frenemy, and, you know, we've all had that frenemy who is a friend of a friend who we don't really like very much. We all have a frenemy living in our head, and she is the voice that tells us why we can't have something, why we're not good enough, why something's not going to work, what we should be afraid of. You know, brace, the headache is coming. Frenemy is pretending she's for us, but she's really not. And the alternative voice is our bestie voice. That is the voice of your best friend. And what I like to do with my clients is play this game called Mental Muzzle. And what we do is we just imagine that every time frenemy starts talking, we catch her, right? Because awareness is half the battle with anything that you're doing, any behavior you're changing. Your awareness of your own behavior is literally 50% of getting yourself to the other side of changing it. So when we notice frenemy and we picture her, and I want you all to picture now, the frenemy who you've disliked in the past or some little cartoon character. And I want you to just put a muzzle on frenemy, tell her no thank you, and then ask yourself, what would bestie say? And say that. Play this little game in your head for just a few days. Not only will you begin to notice how many times you say negative things in your own head, we all do it, you'll also begin to master that automatic response, and you'll start to hear the voice of your bestie first versus the voice of frenemy, which is what we typically do. And just as a little side note, you know, there is a reason for this. Our brain is not designed to make us happy, although that's what we would all like. Our brain is designed to keep us safe. And so our brain is constantly on a safe, yes. So we're on this search and destroy mission to identify threat, right? And so frenemy has a positive intent. She's trying to protect us, but she's not going to get us where we want to go. So we want to shift from the voice of frenemy to the voice of best friend. And we just do that by putting a mental muzzle on our frenemy every time she rears her irritating little head.
I was going to say ugly head, but, you know, when you were talking, I instantly went back to my cartoon days. You know, I frequently, on a Saturday, I will schedule what I call a nervous breakdown. It's a mini one. I'm watching cartoons. I'm laughing. I schedule everything.
I love it.
But, you know, this way I know, okay, I've got 30 minutes to just have a fit. Right, so I have my fit. I never make 30 minutes because I'm laughing at myself by minute three. But I instantly, when you started talking, went back to remember those cartoons that would have the devil on one side and the angel on the other, and there'd
yes.
be a little argument going back and forth. And that's how I pictured it when you were speaking.
Well, and that really helped because, you know, what happens in our brain is we form these things called neural pathways. Anything that you do repetitively, including that internal worry, actually forms a groove in your brain. And, you know, for those of us who are of an age, you'll remember LPs or records that had those little tracks. So what we want to do whenever we're attempting to change a behavior is to interrupt that old pattern, interrupt that old neural pathway, and to begin to lay a new groove. And we do that in a number of different ways by interrupting the pattern, but humor is a great way to interrupt a pattern, as is irreverence. You know, one of the things I'll do, I won't do it here, but I'll do with my clients many times, is cuts, because that also jars your brain. Anything that jars your brain out of kind of that sleepy little groove that it's used to being in will help you change your brain patterns.
Now, what do you mean by cut? I mean, we're not talking, you know, razor blades, obviously, but what does
mean
exactly?
Well, so what we're looking at doing, when you have a pattern that's going on in your brain, what you want to do is interrupt that pattern. So not necessarily cut it, but you want to interrupt that pattern let's imagine you've got your inside voice, your frenemy, who's talking about the headache that you know is coming on. That is a patterned discussion, a patterned worry in your brain. So what we want to do is we want to just interrupt that pattern. And you can do that by laughing, by cussing. I said, not cutting, but by saying,
oh, you said cut. Okay.
Yes.
That
yes.
I can do.
Yes, because that actually, it jars your brain so that it's not actually going down that old familiar groove. It's looking for a new way to adapt.
I like to make up new cuss words, and I have done it outside in the yard with the neighbors listening.
Fabulous.
One time I smacked myself really hard. You know, I was actually trying to mow my lawn, which is something I do not enjoy. I don't deal well with humidity, and I throw up and sometimes faint. So I'm not often out there once humidity hits, but I was out there with my tiny little electric lawnmower and I wanted to test it, and I ran my eyeball straight into a branch that was kind of hanging down. I don't even know what I said, but it was powerful because I hear the neighbor going, "Are you okay?" No. He said, "What are you saying?" I said, "I don't have a clue. I was just making up stuff. It felt good," and it was. And then I started laughing, and he did too. So we're still friends. But I mean,
That's
I was just
great.
Making up odd-sounding, very strong-sounding words, and none of them made a lick of sense. But I think he was, you know, do I call an ambulance? Do I go over and see if she's okay? What's going on? It was crazy. But
you were creating
some
new brain pattern for him.
I'm afraid so. Poor guy.
I love it.
But yeah, and you know, it's interesting that we're talking about this because, I mean, sometimes, and you do have to be aware, and that's something that I really strive to be aware of, what I'm thinking, what I'm saying, where I'm walking. You know, it's not me being, oh, you know, I've got to pay close attention, but if I'm saying something stupid or doing something stupid, as we all do, it's a good moment to just go, that's not working for me. How can I change this and how can I not do this again? How aware are we as people? I mean, is this something that we're getting better about?
That's really dependent upon the person. I think certainly
yeah.
there are so
yeah.
many strides being made in brain science. But awareness is just about intention. It's about how present am I willing to be in this moment? How willing am I to look at my own behaviors? And how motivated am I to make a change? What I typically find is, you know, the first mistake or the first misunderstanding that most people have, and one of the things I love to do is I love to shift thinking. So I love to take, you know, this old notion and turn it on its head based on science and give people a new way of interpreting something. And, you know, our power is a misunderstood thing. Power is typically understood to be this outside force that is given to a chosen few, and it's associated with potentially position or with money. But power, scientifically, is actually the composite of three things. Power is not something you just have. Power is something you do, and it's a composite of what you think and what you say and what you do. So empowerment is an action. Empowerment is about you taking conscious charge of your thoughts, of your words, and of your deeds. And that's essentially the work I do no matter what I'm doing, whether I'm helping a female founder fund her company, or I'm helping an executive go for a promotion, or I'm helping a solo business owner, author, establish thought leadership. We are always teaching her how to consciously marshal her power. And I think that's what you're referring to, is how can we become more aware of our own behavior so that we have more power? Yes?
Yeah, exactly. And I love what you say, you know, because we talked about this in our pre-interview. Power is not something you have, it's something you do. And I'm
yes.
wondering what self-confidence has to do with that as well.
Well, it's such a good question. Self-confidence is also misunderstood, understood to be something that perhaps you're born with. Maybe if you are beautiful, you're confident. Maybe if you're smart, you're confident. But what science
shows us is
that confidence.
Oh, see, I had all three. There we go.
There you go. There you go.
That's true.
Right. Well, and what we find is that, you know, the universe will test us throughout our life. And as we age, we lose a lot of those external components that have once made us powerful and or feel confident. And so we have to really develop our internal fortitude, which is linked to confidence. Confidence is literally something you behave your way into. It's not something you can just think your way into. Confidence is a result of you believing that you can handle whatever happens, of you counting on yourself, knowing you can count on yourself to follow through. So confidence does not say, I won't have any problems. Confidence says, I can handle whatever problem comes. And typically, that type of fortitude internally is a result of having met and overcome many challenges in life. So I actually find confidence growing as women get older because we learn to rely on ourselves. And that's really all confidence is about.
And see, that makes perfect sense to me. I mean, you can be confident as a younger person, but you're really more arrogant than anything. And then you kind of outgrow that as life kind of smacks you around a bit. Been there, done that. And you're like,
yes.
Okay, but I overcame that, and I came out of the other side stronger, smarter, more agile. So these are the things that we need to pay attention to, right? How we dealt with, you know, adversities, with, I don't know, divorce, death, you know, catastrophic illness, whatever it was. Could have
yes.
been something very simple. It could have been something truly catastrophic. But, how, you know, I'm thinking what I'm hearing from you is that sometimes you just need to sit down quietly, even if it's not an issue with you right at this moment, but kind of do an audit. You know, where have I come from? How have I done? How am I doing?
Yes.
You know, what did I overcome? What is really working for me? What is not working? Okay, let's put that in the you got to go now pile. So does that sound about right?
It sounds so right, because what we will come to find out is that most things we're told to be afraid of, divorce, as you said, a company not working, getting diagnosed with something, being, you know, audited, all of these things that are certainly incredible stressors and we're told to be very fearful of, once you actually have gone through the gauntlet and you have come out the other side, even if it was a very unpleasant journey, you learn that no matter what happens, you're going to be okay. But there's one more little trick that you can use in order to feel more confident. And at the end of the day, our confidence has to do with our own belief in our ability to follow through. I do this little test with my clients, or this little experiment with my clients, called piggy bank. Essentially, every time you make a commitment to yourself and you follow through, you make a deposit in your confidence account or in your power account. And what you're doing is you're showing yourself you can follow through. Every time you break a commitment to yourself, you're making a withdrawal. So confidence has to do really with how often you follow through and make a deposit versus how often you flake on yourself and do not. And that has to do with how you're making commitments. You know, are you, like many women, saying yes to things you don't want to agree to before you even realize the agreement has flown out of your mouth, right? Are you being compliant and agreeable because you want approval from the people around you? Or have you reached a point in your life where you can speak up for yourself when you need to, where you can say no and disappoint others so that you're not disappointing yourself? Our ability to follow through for ourselves is the basis of our confidence. So with Piggy Bank, what I do with a client is just test for a week. Every time you follow through on a commitment, and that can be a commitment like, I'm going to go on a walk today. I'm going to quit at 5. I'm going to write for 1 hour. Every time you make good on a commitment that you've made to yourself, you want to put a little coin in your piggy bank. And every time you do not, you take a coin out. And at the end of the week, you actually have this visual representation of how often you let yourself down. Because the degree to which you flake on your own commitments to yourself is the degree to which your own confidence will be undermined, which is difficult because you have to look at your own behavior, but incredibly liberating because you are 100% in charge of your behavior.
I think that is brilliant. That's a brilliant, brilliant illustration. And I have learned over time that if I promise nobody but myself and I don't do it, I can't sleep. I don't sleep well anyway, but that just puts an extra burden on me. And I have been known to jump up at 2 o'clock in the morning and say, God darn it. All right, I'm back to my computer, and it may be something simple. It may be something that takes me an hour. But by golly, I said I would do it, and I go do it. Because if I don't, I feel like crap. It really bothers me.
And that is that's your, you know, the intuition inside of us. Our spirit wants to be congruent, right? Confidence is also about congruent action. Power is about congruent action, meaning if we say we want X, then we want to make sure we're behaving for X. And when we don't, that's going to cause a little bit of discomfort. And, you know, one little side note that I do see, and that I've overcome this myself, you know, you said earlier, you do your Wonder Woman pose, which I love. What I have seen with most women, though, is that we have these to-do lists that are like Superwoman could not accomplish this list in a day if she could stop time to make it happen, right? So the other thing that I really encourage my clients to do is not just make sure that you're taking congruent actions, meaning you are behaving for what you want, but make sure that you've got an actual achievable list of things to do in front of you on a day-to-day basis so that, you know, by the end of the day, if you have worked in a focused, diligent fashion, you actually have the capacity to accomplish what was on your list versus that you've got a superhuman list of things to do that no one could actually accomplish. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Again, had to learn that the hard way. Yeah, I was a multitasker. I could multitask in my sleep, it seemed like, and I had to really, and the word you use, focus, so important. I had to focus, and still do, to be honest, on not multitasking. So I have a planner, and I put down the three most important things, and then, you know, under there may be a subcategory under that. You know, this is how I'm going to accomplish it. But I don't overburden myself. And if I do, I go back, I walk off, I take a breath, go back and go, is this really important? Is this moving me forward? Is this moving my client forward? Okay, you got to go now. I love that phrase, you got to go now. Go, go, go.
I love it.
Yeah, you go now. So it really does, you have to focus. And another thing you said, listen, my mom, who passed away last year, God bless her, she would swear that my very first word was not mom or dad or whatever it is that babies say. It was no. And she said I was very clear about the word no. And she took me seriously. And it's still, goodness, one of my favorite words. No is a word. It's also a complete sentence as far as I'm concerned. If I tell you no, I may say it twice. There's no third time. I meant no.
No is 100%. Grammatically, no is a complete sentence, right? Just no,
right.
Period. That is grammatically correct. And, you know, the thing that I find so often is that when we say yes, when we mean no, we're typically doing that because we want someone to think we're nice. We want someone to like us. We want their approval. But there is nothing less nice than doing something you don't want to do and being mad the whole time you're doing it, or gossiping about someone because you have to do it, which is what most people will tend to do, right? When you agree to do something you don't want to do. So no is not only a complete sentence, it is literally the key to unlock your jail cell so that you can behave your way into the life you want. Because here's the truth. If you are a yes person, meaning you're the go-to person for everyone in your life and you keep catching every ball that's thrown at you, guess what's going to happen? People do what works. They're going to keep throwing stuff at you and you're going to reach the end of your life realizing that you accomplished everyone else's priorities but your own. So no is a life skill. The ability to say no is a life skill.
Well, I agree with you. And here's the thing, and you know, I've seen members of my team do this. They'll say, oh yeah, I can do that. And then they disappear because they really can't do it or they didn't want to do it. Yeah, and then all of a sudden they're letting themselves down, they're letting me down. So I'm very clear, again, lessons learned, about what I'm asking my team to do. And fortunately, I don't ever have to ask my team to do something that as a techie nerd, I don't know how to do. They may know how to do it better. I like to hire people that are smarter at some things than I am. But yell this, oh, yeah, I can run with this, and here's some suggestions. Okay, let's go with that. But the worst thing you can do is say, oh, sure, I'll do that, and then you're resentful and you're dragging your feet.
Yes.
Now everybody's mad. It's not a good thing. And in business, it's a bad thing.
It really is. And here's the truth. What I'll always tell my clients is you are going to every time a request is given to you, someone is going to be disappointed if you don't want to do that. So either you're going to be disappointed because you're going to be doing something you don't want to do, or you're going to disappoint someone else because you've told them no. And really, the extent to which you are comfortable being uncomfortable in the moment is the extent to which you reserve your power for the things that are important to you. Here's another little trick. You don't have to say no in person. I have this thing called a 24-hour yes diet. Best diet that you'll ever be on in your life. And what I typically will do with my clients, because most women are conditioned to be agreeable, to please, to say yes, we have this rule that they can't say yes to any request, even if they're very excited about it, for 24 hours. They have to sit with it. And then if they decide they don't want to move forward with it, we text or email, right? The chicken way out is fine. Say no to make sure that they're declining that request.
I love that. Do you have an example that you can share without naming names?
Oh, sure. I mean, let's do something as simple as you're in a work situation and we're all working from home now and your plate is already full. And let's say a coworker asks, hey, you know, I really want to talk something through. Do you have 30 minutes? Can I call you? And let's say, you know, this coworker is a coworker who really just wants to complain to you for 30 minutes at a time or to dump on you for 30 minutes at a time. Then what you want to do is just say, you know, I don't have time for that right now. I was just working with a client actually that had this challenge, and her fear was, hey, we're all home now. We all have more time than we've ever had before. You know, won't my coworker know that I just don't want to talk to her?
right.
And we went to that whole no is a complete sentence, right? That all you have to say is, no, you know, I'm not able to do that this afternoon. You don't need to tell her a huge tale of why you can't do it. You just need to say, no, I'm not able to. You know, so sorry about that. And the more you follow through for yourself and that you say yes to you, right? Every time you say no to someone else's request, what you're actually doing is blocking and tackling to create time for the things that are actually most important to you. And to that end, you know, another trick that I use with clients or another tool that I use with clients is something called a priority list. And in coaching, a priority is something that is important to you or something that requires your time and attention for your life to function. So that could be working out. That's important to you. Or paying your bills. Your life requires that for you to function. Once you've created a list of your priorities, and typically we'll have between 5 and 8 priorities, then you can use that priority list as a true north. Imagine you've got a compass. And every time a request comes in, you can just use a little litmus test and look at your priorities. And the question you want to ask is, does this support one of my priority areas? And if it does, then you enthusiastically say yes. And if it does not, then you say no. My coach and I are working with priorities right now, and that does not fit on my list. But it gives a black and white litmus tool for you to begin making decisions about what you agree to and what you decline.
Guess what I'm building as soon as we're done? I don't think I've ever made a priority list. You know, I just put, you know, my mom used to say, I jump out of bed and the devil says, oh, crap, she's awake. That's kind of how I've always led my life. But, you know, I think it's time for me to really sit down and figure out. I mean, I think I know them. In fact, I'm sure I know them. But I've never written them down and studied them and say, okay, this is good. This is where I say no to a lot of things. This is where I say yes to some things. And really have it in front of me. I'm going to write it on my whiteboard. Thank you for that. I never thought of it.
You got it.
Honestly, never
you
thought
got
of
it.
It.
Well, and
okay,
again, it's bringing things into our
awareness, I'm sorry.
Right? It's making it's this whole, you know, everything we're talking about today is about bringing our own behavior and our own decision making into our awareness so that we can understand what is motivating our behavior and that we can understand where we need to make adjustments if we're going to have more of what we want in our life and less of what we don't. We are in charge.
Exactly. And that brings me to something else I've heard you say, which is self-care is not selfish, which I've always said. But you take it a step further. You say it's science. Let's talk about that.
It is. So this is my soapbox issue because I have never worked with a woman who did not have some kind of mental block around taking care of her physical body. So self-care is the basis of performance, the scientific basis of performance. And what I'll say all the time is, self-care is not selfish, which is what, you know, whole groups of people have tried to condition us into believing. Self-care is science. And I actually have four non-negotiables. And I learned really around this first one. First, let me tell you about the non-negotiables, and then we'll go into the detail. So the four non-negotiables of self-care are sleep, hydration, nourishment, and movement. And the first component, sleep, I was actually not a huge proponent of until I began working with Arianna Huffington and Thrive Global. And for the longest time, I've been facilitating workshops within corporate settings for, you know, hardcore focused executives. And what I've learned in doing that is that sleep is the basis of every action we take. So if you have three nights in a row of 5 hours of sleep or less, did you know that your brain is functioning at the same level as if you were legally drunk? Three nights, 5 hours or less of sleep, and I've never been in a room where at least half the room did not have this experience. Your brain.
How about most of your life? Am I not functioning?
Yes.
And I'm serious. I have never slept well. It's not one of my super skills. You know, it just isn't. I have just catnapped all of my life. If I sleep 3 hours in a row, I wake up and go, oh, 3 hours. Holy crap. And then I'm using that word a lot today. I apologize. It's just one of
those
days. So at least I'm not using something worse, right, even if it is my own show. But I've never really – I don't have trouble really – getting to sleep once I decide I'm going to sleep, but staying asleep is a real problem for me. I mean, it has been all of my life since I was an infant, really.
Well,
so
I wonder what you would
smarter?
Accomplish if you had a...
Darn. Darn. I'm going to have to find a way to sleep better because it's not working for me.
Well, The Sleep Revolution is Arianna Huffington's book, and it is an entire book on how to create an environment and a routine that allows you to sleep. And seriously, 5 hours or less of sleep a night, and you are operating at a level where you would not even be allowed to operate a vehicle. So seriously, sleep is a priority. And the people in my life will tell you, I am maniacal about my sleep. I have a bedtime. When I'm working with clients, we have a little game we play called Night Night Sleepy Tight. And really, Night Night Sleepy Tight is just a bedtime routine that you would use as if you were putting a child you love to bed so that you've got the same activities that you're doing. Maybe you have a cup of tea or you take a hot bath. You get into your bed, you're making sure that you've got a cool environment, that you're nice and comfortable, that there are no electronics or television in the room. But really, sleep is an imperative. And then the other three components of self-care are around hydration. And again, this is about your brain. You know, our body is 70% water. So when you are dehydrated, you are not able to think clearly and you will be fatigued. So we want to get our 7 to 8 hours of sleep each night. We want to hydrate. And then when we're nourishing, you know, what I find is that especially women have been taught to eat for weight. And I like to teach my clients to eat for mood. What we want to do is eat food.
That's new.
Yeah, eat for mood, right? Don't eat for weight. You want to eat for mood. And there are foods you can eat that actually help your body to create tryptophan. And tryptophan is actually precursor to serotonin. And serotonin is actually a chemical or a neurotransmitter that improves mood in your brain. So foods like salmon, foods like fresh fruits and vegetables, foods
avocado.
That feed, yes, avocado is another one, foods that feed your brain. And this is, again, not just, this is not my authorship. If you Google foods for a happy brain, you're going to get books on books that actually teach you how to do this, whole diets that have been developed. But you want to make sure that you're eating at regular intervals, every 3 to 5 hours, so that you're fueled. But you want to make sure that what you're putting in your body is actually going to feed your brain so that you have a happy brain that functions at its most optimal level. And that sounds so simple, but I have never worked with someone who was not a nutritionist who ate for a happy brain. And then the final component is about, it's kind of a revolutionary thing. And again, as we get into brain science, as we learn more about the brain, we're able to make these distinctions and determinations. But just try it. Google foods for a happy brain, and you're going to come up with a whole list of fun things to encourage you. And then the final thing is we want to move, right? We want to get some kind of exercise every day. Walking is one of the most powerful exercises you can do. It is free. You can even do it now with gyms closed as we're all sheltered in place. But you really want to have some kind of movement every day, ideally to the degree that you sweat, but you want to have some kind of movement so that you are supporting your body in being in operating and performing at an optimal level. So the four self-care is science basics: sleep, hydrate, nourish, and sweat. So you want to sleep 7 to 8 hours a night. You want to hydrate, and you're looking at 7 to 8 glasses of water a day. You want to eat for a happy brain, and you want to move your body.
Okay, I have a question. I live in the deep south. It is very humid. We have gorgeous skin, I will say that. But just walking outside to go to the car causes a lot of sweat. Does that count, or do I have to actually move? I'm being a little facetious, but sweating is not
sweating
a problem. We glow. We're glowing down here.
You're nice and clean there. You want to move for an extended period of time. Maybe you want to
be
that
smart
early.
Alec.
Yeah,
but walking the
I
dog
know.
Is terrific. You know, she's out there, you know, yanking me along until I got her a different collar, so now she can't yank me anymore. But, you know, I find it, and I don't meditate well. This is just an off thought, I guess. I've never really learned how to slow my monkey brain down enough or my squirrel brain down enough to meditate. I either, you know, I'll be trying to meditate, and I'm doing everything I'm being told on the little app, and I wake up a little bit later drooling, or I catch myself building my... Every time I will start writing my Thanksgiving grocery list in July. It doesn't matter. It's always the same list. So, but I do find when I'm walking the dog, if it's, you know, late at night or early in the morning, not in the heat because I really can't take it, I find myself falling into kind of a walking meditation, which I find very helpful. I don't even notice it. And then all of a sudden I'll realize that I walked right past my house and I'm down at the wrong road and going, where am I? It happens all the time.
Oh, I love it. Well, and you bring up an important point. You know, there are so many times, and the scientific benefits of meditation are clear and are indisputable. However, I find time and time again, especially with high-achieving go-getter people, that meditation can be a difficult concept because we're worried about whether or not we're doing it right. We think we have to have these huge chunks of time.
Working. I'm not doing this right. Yeah, exactly.
Right. So meditation light. I do this with my clients who are not yet meditating. You can activate the same part of your brain that meditation activates with other activities. Walking in nature is one of them. So you're unconsciously already doing this. Other activities that will activate the part of your brain that meditation activates, adult coloring books are a great activity. Knitting is another thing that can activate that part of your brain. I also have something that I call meditation light, which I will start with my clients. And we do something called a theme song ritual. So a theme song ritual essentially asks you to pick a song that you find inspiring and just go onto YouTube and start your day or give yourself 3 minutes in the day to just sit quietly and listen to that song one time each day. And that actually gives your brain something to latch onto because you're listening to the song that you like, but it also activate your parasympathetic nervous system and that same part of your brain that meditation impacts. So meditation light, you can do a theme song ritual, you can color, you can knit, you can walk, you can journal. These are all activities that give you the benefit or the bang for the buck of meditation if you're not yet a meditator.
I do something that I call open refrigerator syndrome. You know, we all open the refrigerator door and our mind just goes, ah, I'm out of here. I do it often. It's nice and cool in there, and I'm not thinking. It's a mini. It's a mini one.
You have a lot of
French doors. I just open them and stick my whole body in there. Ooh. And then after a while, I'm like, okay, I've got to stop now. You know, my brain comes back and says, are you there? It works. It's probably not good for electricity, but it works.
I love it.
Okay, so I have a question. Well, I did have a question. I just talked myself out of it because I forgot it. So today is just one of those goofy days, I'm telling you. We talked about confidence that can be cultivated because, you know, you've given us the science about that. But I wanted to ask you about drama because you say that drama kills dreams. And boy, do I know that. I'm not a big drama queen, and I'll be very frank with you. I can't be around them. I just want to smack them. I don't do well. You know, I just want to say shut up or go away or better yet, do both. I'm not good about things like that.
I love it.
And so your question is specifically about?
Yeah, drama. I mean, it's part of the brain science, I know, but how does it kill dreams? Is it you being dramatic or is it the people around you? Let's talk about that because I'm not sure what the science is on that.
Well, drama is a distraction. So drama is cheap energy. It takes your eye off the ball of whatever you should be using your energy for. And again, we talked about congruent action. And congruent action means that you have decided what you want, right? So let's think about those priorities you've set. These are the things that are important to me or that require my time and attention for my life to function. And when you begin to orient your life around the things that matter to you, the ideal is that you are behaving for what you want, you are speaking for what you want, and you are thinking about what you want. So your time, your attention, and your energy are directed toward your goals. But what typically happens in life is that even though we're clear about what we want, we get taken down these rabbit holes, care of drama, and there are 5 buckets of drama. So I'll go through these, and each of your listeners can determine which type of drama may be showing up in your life. So first I'll tell you what they are, and then we'll dive into them. So the 5 buckets of drama are chaos, 4 boundaries, lack of direction, resentment, and need for attention. So in chaos, what that means is you're not handling your business, right? And business always shows up to be handled. And so if you are constantly working on a deadline in that adrenaline, not handling your business until it absolutely must be handled, maybe you're filing your taxes the night before, or you're writing your report the morning of, or you're doing your meeting prep 5 minutes before your meeting, there is a payoff for chaos because you get that little adrenaline hit. But with chaos, you are constantly in drama. Poor boundaries, and we've talked about this pretty extensively already today. If you have allowed yourself to become the go-to person every time someone has a problem, then you're always going to be dealing with a problem. Or if you are saying yes when you mean no, then you are always going to be doing something you don't want to be doing. And poor boundaries create drama. Lack of direction means that you haven't established a set of clear goals or a vision for your life. And that leads to what I call bright, shiny ball syndrome, where you're just jumping around all over the place, going from one thing to another, which means you never really make a lot of progress. So lack of direction creates a lot of distraction, a lot of drama. In a toxic capacity, resentment is a form of drama, and this is the most dangerous kind. So if you're holding your tongue, if you're not speaking up for yourself, if you're nursing a grudge, if you're saying you're okay with something when you're really not okay with something, that breeds resentment. And resentment is a toxic energy that can actually make you sick and that certainly derails your dreams. And then finally, and I used to be guilty of this bucket, if you learned when you were younger that in order to get attention, you had to have a problem, you can go into adulthood with this need for attention where your unconscious pattern is to raise your hand and say, oh, I have someone is a hypochondriac. They're always sick or they're always in trouble. They learn that they get attention when they have a problem, but we all have one of those people in our lives and none of us want to talk to the person that has the problem all the time, right? So you can be stuck in this, I need attention drama bucket that keeps you down and disempowered. So those five buckets, chaos, poor boundaries, lack of direction, resentment, and need for attention are drama buckets that can derail you mightily.
Do you happen to know anybody who has all of those buckets? Because I don't want to know them. Just email me later and tell me if this is somebody we both know.
Well, you know, I think we all have experience with them, you know, one time or another. But I do find that each of us has a go-to pattern. And when I'm working with a client, we do two things. First, we name the drama as it is happening. So you want to name the bucket you're in, right? When you are in drama, you want to just stop. And again, awareness is half the battle. What kind of drama am I doing right now? And then we want to do something that I call identify and adjust. Because what we want to do is identify what is the common denominator? What is the trigger that is always pulling me in to this rabbit hole? And what we will typically find is that it is a person or a place that is always associated with you being in that type of drama. And when you identify the trigger, the person or the place that is constantly pulling you into this drama, you need to do one of two things. You need to either remove that person or place from your life, period, or you need to change the rules around how that person or place shows up. So you need to set some boundaries. So you either need to remove it or you need to set some boundaries, because drama is not appropriate for you to be dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And a rule, you set a boundary that is not honored, right, then you need to just remove that place or person. Otherwise, you're going to be in, you know, a drama hell of your own making.
And see, I'm listening to this, and listen, everything you're saying resonates with me. I've been one or the other, sometimes both, or three, and not really liking myself or the people around me very much, but I'm also thinking that people listening to this are going to say, yeah, but when, you know, I'm busy, everything, the world's falling apart, I'm really busy. When do I have to stop and you know, look at all these things? And my thought would be, when it happens, take a moment, go stand in the corner, do whatever you have to do, but take the time to really take a look at what's bugging you, how you're responding to it, how you're behaving, and don't put it off until later, because it's not going to matter at midnight. It's going to matter right now. Is that fair to say? Yeah, just take the time. Do it.
Well, and I think the easiest tool that I'll give my clients is just a simple question. Do I feel bad or do I feel good? If you feel bad every time you are around a certain person, you need to think twice about being around that person. If you feel bad every time you are in a certain place, you do not need to be in that place, or you need to change the rules of that place, period. And the more you notice, you know, it can be very overwhelming to say, oh, which drama bucket am I in? But if you can just notice, do I feel bad or do I feel good? And what is the pattern of me feeling bad? What is the pattern of me feeling good? And at the end of the day, you know, there's something in psychology called agency. The core of the work that I do, giving my clients agency, giving my readers agency, giving my listeners agency. And agency means that you are in charge of your own behavior. Every one of us has the capacity for agency. And yet the only way to master that is to begin to behave our way into it on a day-to-day basis. So you are 100% right that to catch ourselves in the moment that something is happening, we can begin to, again, adjust those brain patterns and to use our voice, to use our thoughts, and to use our deeds in order to take us closer to what we want, to the experiences we want to have, and to move us further away from those things that we do not.
Exactly. And that leads me, you know, to a bit of a random thought. While you were talking, I thought about objects and what we're tolerating. I don't know, but, you know, objects, they have power. You can look at a picture of yourself with your siblings and your grandmother and go, "Oh." Or you can look at a picture of another family or friend that you really didn't like. You didn't like them then, and you really don't like them now. That, for me, goes in the burn pile. I don't keep those objects around. If I notice that your mouth is turning down, let's just call it resting bitch face. You're looking at something, and you can feel your face just kind of fall. Your mouth, you know, the corners of your mouth are turning down. Get rid of it. It's an object that has no business being around you all the time when it's causing you a physical reaction.
Great point. In psychology, that's called an anchor. So an anchor
has
a meaning. You are. And we can use anchors powerfully. An example, and I use this with my clients all of the time. I'll have my client put a hairband or a bracelet around their wrist, and that acts as an anchor to remind them to behave for their own power, to behave for their own confidence, to be aware of their own behavior. That is an anchor. A photo can also be an anchor. So an anchor is literally a physical object that is linked to some meaning in our mind.
And, you know, and I've noticed this with divorced women. All of a sudden, they're cleaning house. I mean, they are, and I think it's pretty smart. They're getting rid of anything that had a bad memory for them. If it was, you know, even a butter jar, you know, those little butter things that you put ice water and you put your butter in, it keeps it fresh. I had one. I got rid of it. And, you know, I didn't want it. I mean, it was given to me by my ex-husband. It went straight to the Goodwill. It's like every time I see it, I go, ooh. Yeah. And it was cute, and I enjoyed it while I had it. But later it became one of those moments where I noticed my face falling. It's like, no, you got to go. You go now.
Yeah, good awareness for you.
Well, yeah, and yeah, you're right. I mean, I never thought of it that way. I know what bothers me, and I know what doesn't bother me. I know what makes me smile. And I know it's like, you know, your day is, you were good to be here, but really it's, whatever it is, it could be a picture frame, it could be anything. But when it no longer serves you and you find that you're having a physical reaction to it, it's probably time to let it go.
Amen.
So that's just my little piece of the puzzle.
I love
there.
It.
Listen, we have gone through an hour very, very quickly. And it's been just, you know, so much fun talking with you. But before we go, tell, you know, the audience anything that you want them to know about you and where they can find you.
Sure, absolutely. So I have a 20-lesson on-demand program for women called Get Your Groove Back, which will help you figure out what you want and what you have to start or stop doing to have that. It also includes a video and a blog on drama, which we've just been talking about, on power, on confidence. And you can find that at kimfulcher.com. On Instagram, I am KimFulcher123. On Facebook, I am Kim.Fulcher1. On LinkedIn, Kimberly Fulcher. And for all of your listeners, I am thrilled to offer a free ebook for my first book, Remodel Your Reality. Just email me, Kim@KimberlyFulcher.com, and I'm happy to send that book with our compliments to your listeners. And it's just been so fun talking with you, Denise, but the time flew by. I just poured my coffee and dialed in, and look at it. It's been an hour. That's amazing.
I know, and that's the best part about these conversations that I am truly blessed to have with people like you and my guests who come from all over the world. Listen, I live in a very small town. It's really a hamlet more than anything, and I'm 15 miles from the Gulf of Mexico as a crow flies. I'm not going to get to meet people like you in my normal day-to-day movements, certainly not in the parking lot of Walmart. So it has been really fascinating speaking with you, and I would love to have you come back either later. Oh, sorry, my cat just stuck his. You mentioned tea and coffee. He just stuck his head in my cup. Sorry.
All good. All good.
Oh God, I have feline office assistants. I am never without them. But I would like for you to come back maybe later in the year or even early next year, and we can kind of revisit this and see what this. And I hate to not have an evergreen show, but things are very different right now. Things are very trying. Things are troubling. And I would like to come back and say, okay, you know, what have we learned from this? How are people growing? How are they moving into kind of a new normal? Would you mind coming back?
Yes. I would love it. The door is wide open.
Oh, good.
It's been a pleasure.
Good. It has. Kim, thank you so much for speaking with me. And I love all of the wonderful tips and the advice that you've shared with our audience and me. Trust me, my whiteboard is going to, I'll probably take a picture of it and send it to you. My whiteboard is going to get cleaned, and I'm going to use color markers and just have it in front of me. I can't believe I never thought of that, so thank you for that. So before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to look for us in iTunes, and honestly, anywhere else you consume your business podcasts. Just look for your partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here.
Thank you.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.